I don't know how many times I've heard Raffi's Banana Phone album over the past year. A lot. It's a favorite in our house. But there is one song that keeps jumping out for me in it, again and again and again, every time I hear it. And it really resonates for me. And so I'm just going to read the words for you. This is Mr. Bell's Changing Garden. Mr. Bell's from a foreign place. His family all were farmers. He arrived from across the sea and came to be next door. And he works his land with a knowing hand. Though it's very small, he makes it grow so well in the changing garden of Mr. Bell. These are asters and edelweiss and rows of roses. Those are hives in the dogwood trees for bees to come and go. It's a wondrous sight in the morning light, and the earth is full. Every color, every smell in the changing garden of Mr. Bell. I once saw a photograph upon his mantel shelf of a beautiful lady, a child in her arms, and a young Mr. Bell himself. I wondered out loud about them, and he answered in the strangest way. He just said, "Look, see how the garden grows. It's always changing every day." Mr. Bell has his morning tea, and I will bring his paper. See the sun through the curtain lace dapple his face and hands. Every day is new. There's so much to do. Life's a mystery, full of secrets that might tell, in the changing garden of Mr. Bell, in the changing garden of Mr. Bell. I think this song offers a wonderful truth about the earth that I want to explore as we celebrate Earth Sunday or Land Sunday in this season of creation. And it's a lesson that's not overly romantic. In the season of creation, it's tempting to do a sermon about how wonderful the earth is and how marvelous and beautiful it is, etc., etc. And that's all well and good. It's led a lot of people to a very deep faith. But the story from Genesis, the curses that are given, are not romantic. It doesn't frame our relationship with the earth in an overly happy way. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. That's a far cry from, "Nature is beautiful, thanks be to God." But this scripture reading from Genesis still, I think it offers us some wisdom about our relationship with the land and its importance in our spiritual development. So in this passage, we read about the curses placed upon the snake and Eve and Adam. And a lot can be said about these curses. The phrase spoken to Eve, "Your desire will be for your husband and he will rule over you," alone requires many books worth of treatment, drawing out the patriarchal assumptions within these words and their ongoing historic effect. So I just want to name that and say all that work is good work. Our understanding of sex and gender has grown tremendously since these words were written. So hear that. But for the season of creation, I want to look at this passage as a mythic origin story about our spiritual development. Adam and Eve have eaten from the tree of knowledge of good and evil and are now creatures of judgment. They suddenly feel shame and put on clothes to hide their nakedness. They're kicked out of the Garden of Eden. They're kicked out of the Garden of Eden. They no longer have everything provided for them. She has to get married. He has to start working the land. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Because outside of Western civilization in the past 100 years, this is simply called growing up. This story is a story about becoming adults. But with growing up comes spiritual development. And that spiritual development is integral to claiming our adulthood, of our claim to maturity. That's why there are so many children in the world, regardless of age. For many, it's an inability to claim that maturity, that spiritual maturity and wisdom that's required of being an adult. The curses placed upon Eve and then Adam, I think, offer a glimpse at that wisdom of growing up. They offer a glimpse of a certain truth that is at the heart of spirituality. And the truth is that life and death are inseparable. That life begets death, and death begets life. For the vast majority of our history, childbirth has not been safe. We are fortunate in our modern world with the advances in medicine that we don't see how dangerous childbirth is, or we don't see it as often, perhaps, as people once did. We don't necessarily see how death is always so close at hand. The curse that is placed upon Eve, "I shall greatly increase your pangs in childbearing, in pain you shall bring forth children," speaks to this fundamental reality of biology. Even outside of childbirth, the monthly cycle of blood is a physical reminder of that truth to women, that life can never be too far from death. Putting aside the patriarchy, putting aside the simplistic understanding of gender, I think we can draw from this reading in its mythological setting that in many ways, women have a spiritual reminder woven into their very bodies that life and death are not opposites, but intimately connected. To the writer of this passage, men would not have been able to learn this lesson from their bodies. They could only learn it from outside themselves. The Neolithic Revolution, the advent of agriculture, allowed for new practices beyond hunting to speak this inherent truth. The death of a seed would lead to the growth of a plant. The pruning of a branch would increase the food output of a plant. A devastating flood could bring new nutrients and rejuvenation to the soil. And at the end of the growing season, the harvest comes with its uprooting, with its plucking, with its blades, killing plants for food. There's a reason the Grim Reaper carries a scythe in our imagery. It is in the field with thorns and thistle, toiling away to grow plants, growing grain by the sweat of your brow, that men are given a glimpse at this truth, that life is dust, and dust is life. Here, in these curses, sexuality, reproduction, agriculture, and death are brought together. And in doing so, we have a marvelous example of Neolithic religion and mythology. It was very common for sexuality and reproduction and agriculture and death to all be merged together in stories in Neolithic mythology. Karen Armstrong has a wonderful discussion of some of these in her book, A Short History of Myth. There were rituals combining sex and planting of fields. I think the story of Demeter, who was the goddess of harvest, but also the goddess of the transition between life and death, and her daughter Persephone, the goddess of the underworld, is a marvelous example of this. Persephone, who's abducted by Hades and taken down to the underworld. Demeter roams the world looking for her daughter, and in her grief, in her weeping, in her mourning, she fails to Well, whether she fails to or just is so angry and enraged that she doesn't want to. She stops letting things grow and we get winter. But then when she finds Persephone, life springs back to the world. However, Hades, before Persephone could leave, had her eat from a pomegranate from the underworld, which tied her to that underworld. So for 4 months of the year, she had to stay in that underworld. So for 4 months of the year, we get Demeter weeping, the goddess of the harvest, weeping, the goddess of agriculture, unable to bring forth life. This is a story about the seasons of the farming year. Yes, it's a story about agriculture. Yes, but it's also a story about loss, a story about death, a story about that inherent cycle and process of life and death and new life, which is found again and again in Neolithic religion. All of these were intrinsically bound together. Other examples are the stories of Osiris in Egypt, of Baal in Mesopotamia. Both had stories about them which involved gods getting chopped up to little bits and sown across the land to make the fields grow. Again, that story of death leading to life and death again. Yes, they were stories of agriculture, but they had that deeper meaning to them. Yes, they explained the cycles of the year, but they explained a deeper cycle within them. The gospel passage for today also offers this intrinsic spiritual lesson. Christianity cannot escape its Neolithic roots. Christ becomes the seed set into the earth who dies, entombed for 3 days before bursting forth into the world again with new life. You can't pull this apart from the agricultural society it was written in. If we don't have our hands in the soil, if we don't have our hands in the earth, if we are not actively participating in those processes which are inherent to the earth, that process of life, death, and resurrection, then we can't possibly believe it. It's one thing to say, yes, death and life are intrinsically united, or yes, there is a tremendous process of life and death and new life that runs through these things, runs through all things. It's one thing to say that and to nod our head and say, yeah, that makes sense. But to believe it is something else entirely. To be changed by it, to be so grounded in it as truth, is to be led by it. We need to encounter it in our lives. We need to encounter it again and again. We need it to get under our fingernails. We need to know it through the sweat of our brow. I get the sense that Mr. Bell got that. He understood the way the world worked. He knew he was participating in that eternal process of creation when he just says, yep, everything changes. He knew he was participating in that spiritual truth of life, death, and resurrection. Now, I don't think it made him happy. We shouldn't equate deep spirituality with happiness. I get the sense that in many ways, Mr. Bell was probably a sad man. But he was a fully developed human grasping onto the realities of the world and fitting it all together into this process. Our disconnection from the earth has a dramatic effect, and not just on the planet itself. Yes, it does, but beyond ethics, it has a dramatic and traumatic effect on our very souls, on our very selves. We need to get our hands literally into the earth so that we can mature. Now, maybe it's not the only way, I don't want to assume, but it's a huge one. It's one upon which the history of civilization has been written. One upon which our very evolution, our genetics, our many billion-year history has been moved by. We need to reach into the earth, into the land, into the tomb of Christ, to use Christian language. We need to plant seeds. We need to prune. We need to harvest. We need to lament in winter, knowing that winter is not forever. And we need to celebrate in the spring, also knowing that it's not forever. Get your hands into the earth somehow. Somehow. This is a fundamental Christian practice, to reach into Christ's tomb. You can't get closer to Christ than that. Thanks be to God. Amen.